Hi everyone, welcome to the second episode of season 5 of the Burgess Salmon Pensions Pod. My name's Helen Norman and I'm an associate in Burgess Salmon's Pensions and Lifetime Savings team. And I'm joined by Chris Brown, a partner on our team.
Hi Helen, hi everyone. Great to be back for episode 2. Helen, it was a really great discussion last time, wasn't it, on run-on versus buyout of DB schemes. And
Definitely it was, wasn't it?
And today's episode is on something completely different. So I'm really excited to discuss investment with our special guest this week, because the theory around investment is not something that lawyers typically get too involved in. So Helen, who's joining us today and what are we talking about?
So in today's episode, we're joined by Dave Whitehair, Director of Institutional Business, UKDC at Janus Henderson Investors. And we're discussing defined contribution use of illiquids and productive finance. So Dave works within the UK client group and is responsible for the strategic development of the UKDC business. Dave, thanks so much for coming on the podcast.
Pleasure. Glad to be here.
So Dave, tell us about what you do at Janus Henderson and your role there.
So yeah, in short, my role at Janus Henderson is around being aware and being on top of the big investment trends in the DC market. There's so much going on in the market. It's very fast paced. My role encompasses working with pension fund professionals, pension trustees, investment consultants, everyone in that pensions, DC pensions ecosystem. And then thinking about the role of active fund management. Janus Henderson is a global investment manager focusing on active funds. And thinking about where is the best role for active funds within what's going on currently in the DC investment world. And it's fantastic. It's a challenge, as we're going to discuss in this podcast. Investment in DC is certainly, in my opinion, never been as high as it possibly could and should be on the to-do list for pension schemes, but there's so much else to be done.
And Dave,
but that's part of the challenge I enjoy.
Why it's so important, why DC investment is so important right now?
Yeah, I mean, the biggest challenge, in my opinion, that the pension system and the DC pension system specifically face is the one of adequacy. Effectively ensuring that people have sufficient income to fund their retirement. There was a report from the PLSA not too long ago, which reported that nearly 70% of families in the UK are at risk of not reaching the moderate level of income in retirement. And to put that in monetary terms, it's about £31,000 a year, which is quite an alarming stat.
An alarming statistic, absolutely.
Yeah, so when you think about, okay, what are the levers that we as an industry and people can pull to influence that outcome, influence the adequacy of their DC pot. There's three. You can contribute more to your pension, and that's largely owned by the individual. We can do as much engagement as we want. It's up to people to do that. People can retire later and or make better choices in retirement. Again, that's often coming down to an individual decision. And thirdly, and this is where investment comes in, it's maximizing investment returns. And that's something that we can largely control as an industry, given that, I don't know what the exact stats are, but broadly speaking, over 80%, probably even 90% in some cases of people are invested in that off-the-shelf default solution. You never look into your pension plan. You never see where the money is invested. And, you know, I work in an investment company and I did a show of hands in my office. 8 out of 10 people probably put their hands up. Yeah. So people are auto enrolled often into investment risk, de-risking matrices filled with investment ideas. If we're to get the best investment returns out of them, it's on us as an industry to get the most we can out of those pots and move things forward that way.
I definitely see a constant drive to increase member engagement, like you mentioned, particularly in DC pensions. I did see the other day that Pensions Policy Institute published a report in February of this year, which included the statistic that among adults with at least one defined contribution pension, over a quarter had a very low engagement level, and then a further quarter were categorised as low engagement. There's also recently been a move to appeal to the younger generation, get them to think about their pensions more. I don't know if you saw it, Dave, but in autumn of this year, reality TV personality Gemma Collins from TOWIE, The Only Way Is Essex, was part of a campaign devised by a group of financial companies just to encourage savers to pay their pension some attention and actually think about that as something that you're using your money towards just for the future.
Yeah, this is huge. And investment does come into this. I do think the fundamental premise of engagement should be around that light bulb moment for people that you do have a pension and it's going to be really important for you. You know, we're going through a cost of living crisis now. People are so unengaged with the pension system. They've got much more pressing financial needs. But I think it's important that people understand there is no magic rainbow at the end of working life now. We are, I don't know the exact dates, but I would call it between 5 and 10 years away from average person retiring in the UK being in that Generation DC generation, in that people aren't going to have a DB pension to provide them some form of guaranteed income. And there's a scary stat about the number of millennial generation and younger who aren't going to own their home at the point of retirement. So you're going to have less financial security to fall back on, meaning your DC pension is going to be even more important for your funding your retirement finances. So I think that's a great campaign. I think everyone in the industry should be doing their bit to help people to understand the importance of this. And as people start to get engaged, I think you can bring investment in to make that, you know, connection with, you know, you own a little bit of Tesco, you own a little bit of John Lewis or company. That's maybe a bad example. It's not a public listed company. Maybe we'll get onto those later. But, you know, you've got a little stake in these businesses and it can make it real for people. And that can be huge.
Yeah, absolutely. So we've got a cost of living crisis. It's difficult for people to save, but we've got Generation DC coming. I think it's sort of uncontroversial. I think we'd all agree that it's important for people to focus on their pensions, whether they are contributing more, making better choices, or whether as an industry, we can maximize investment returns. So thinking about investment in DC. Mm-hmm. Where is that and where is it now? And how does that compare to approaching the DB world?
It's definitely fair to say that DC hasn't stood still in terms of where it's been going on investment. You know, I've been in the market for nearly 20 years and you can see continuous evolution of what schemes are trying to do. I guess the start of that journey and a big evolution for the market was when DC schemes en masse started to use investment platforms to access mm-hmm. their investment offering. That meant at their fingertips, they had access to multiple managers. They didn't need to have separate IMAs with managers and be very quite a clunky process to move in and around managers. So that was a big innovation for the industry. And that's led also to the creation of things like blended funds. People call them white labeled funds. And this is the bedrock of fund delivery now. Members will be exposed to what they might see if they ever go onto the member booklet in the investment section around, right, you're going to be in the growth fund. Let's take Tesco. You're going to be in the Tesco growth fund. Okay, well, that's what the member sees. They'll see a fee for that and they'll see what that fund is trying to do. Underneath that fund is, you know, many different types of managers and asset classes and its investment platforms and the capabilities that they bring that's allowed that to become a popular product. And that ultimately provides a lot of flexibility for pension schemes in the DC world and has led to newer asset classes being used. You'll have periods like you do in any investments markets where you see certain types of asset class come in favor and out of favor. Obviously, you've got macroeconomics constantly moving in the background. I guess one of the key things to note in DC is that DC investment platforms have been massively beneficial from that point of view, but they also come with challenge in terms of where we're starting to get to in the market and thinking about how, to your question, Chris, about how we compare with DB. So lots of DC schemes use index funds as a bedrock of their, you know, investment offering, which makes perfect sense. Unlike DB, in DC, it's the members paying the fees. The large majority of scheme structures, it's the member paying the fee. So if you're going to have someone invested for 20, 30, 40 years, it's a good idea to be investing passively to, you know, be able to do it at a lower cost. The market is also very fee sensitive because the pension fund structures that people are investing through are commercial vehicles themselves. So they're looking to win clients. So and it's a very competitive market. So fees are very important in DC. Not that they aren't in DB, but they play a dynamic that isn't evident as much in DB.
Yeah.
And along with fees, investment decisions in DC are also impacted by regulatory and operational issues. I won't go into all the detail on this podcast, but one of the drawbacks of using investment platforms that are structured as life insurance businesses underneath is that the funds held on those platforms are then exposed to a whole bunch of rules and regulations, such as UCITS rules and things like permitted links, which have meant that DC has traditionally focused on publicly listed, daily dealt funds and asset markets. Mm-hmm. And for a long time, you know, that's worked for DC, but all of a sudden it's quite evident how far DC has got away from Big Brother in DB in terms of what it's doing under the bonnet. And the biggest area of difference comes in private markets. So investing in asset classes and fund structures where you're getting exposure to unlisted companies and debt. And that's quite stark to see. And it's gained a lot of attention in recent years.
Why is there so much interest in the private market investments for DC? What's the benefit of those?
I think there's three areas which talks to why there's so much interest in it. The first one is the investment case, fundamentally. Second one is around ESG. And the third one is bringing in this concept of value for money.
Yeah.
So to touch on the first one around the investment case, ultimately we should be, I think as an industry, we should be worried, and we are worried about Generation DC. We talked about this adequacy point. This is the generation we want to be giving exposure to the best and broadest investment opportunities in the world. We need to be thinking about ways to maximize investment returns for people. Mm. And the fundamental reality is that there's a growing number of companies all over the world that are staying private for longer. There's a plethora of data out there around the the IPOs dropping off, and some companies never go public. Mm-hmm. So effectively, if DC isn't giving exposure to its members to this market, this unlisted market, then you're limiting the opportunity set for the underlying members. So that's a key driver here. And there's also a lot of evidence around, just generally around, the returns of public versus private markets. And that, you know, the data is pretty clear, particularly in the private equity space. Going back, you know, a good length of time, not just taking a short data set here, that there is a performance differential. It's evident and it's material. If nothing else, that warrants exploration. Better in private markets.
Okay.
And if nothing else, look, you can explore this to the nth detail. And one of the things that people need to be considerate of is the way that private markets fund structures present their performance returns. So you're not always looking at apples and apples, but...
But what you're saying is that there's a need for diversification, and there's opportunities for DC in different types of investments, in investing in private markets.
Yeah, 100%. Diversification is massive. It's a huge concept in DC. And it's not just thinking about things that behave differently. Fundamentally, it's about the scheme should be thinking about diversifying where those risks and returns come from. And certainly private markets has shown in markets like DB and local authority pension funds, where they use more heavily, that it can definitely deliver that. So the second area is
ESG.
Yes, the second area is definitely ESG. This is obviously a huge theme in DC, and specifically around climate change right now. We're starting to see the rise of interest in more themes such as biodiversity and natural capital.
Mm.
Ultimately, you want to be able to access these opportunities through both public and private markets. Benefit of private markets is you can physically own infrastructure or companies that are directly linked with ESG and climate change agenda. You can own a field, you can own a timber, you can own a forest, you can own a carbon capture facility, and you can take income off that, but you can also know that that investment is driving real world change in ESG.
And I think that would be really attractive for members.
Yeah, I agree. There's one of the DC schemes out there that's got this vision, and I don't know if it's come to reality yet, but it's fascinating. It goes back to your point, Helen, around engagement. You're driving on the motorway, you have your pension fund app in your pocket with notifications enabled, and you pass a wind farm, you get a notification that says you own a slice of that wind farm through your workplace pension scheme. Like that's the future. And I think people can be hopefully proud of that, and it brings it to life. And if nothing else, their pension's buzzing in their pocket for the first time ever. And they're actually taking
notes. Yeah, it makes it real.
Yeah. And the third area around private markets is around value for money. This is obviously a huge area. You know, you guys as lawyers in this space will know probably better than me, but there's so much focus now on how we as an industry report on value and move away from a market that, as I mentioned before, has been so focused on cost.
Dave, yeah, absolutely. I mean, DC scheme is very much the focus of attention from the government, from regulators. So the pensions regulator and the FCA at the moment, and, you know, big part of that is value for money. So the FCA's ongoing value for money framework consultation, but also the regulator's intention, paying attention on ensuring good governance of DC schemes, a large part of which includes, the value for member assessments. So, absolutely value for money, value for members, a huge part of focus in the DC world.
And also Mansion House. So our listeners will be aware of the Mansion House reforms coming from Chancellor Jeremy Hunt's speech of July last year. And that proposed to incentivise companies to start to grow in the UK by strengthening the UK's own position as a listings destination. So there's the Mansion House Compact, where a group of representatives of some of the UK's largest DC pension schemes, people like Aviva, Scottish Widows, LNG, all being signatories to that and committing them to the objective of allocating at least 5% of their default funds to unlisted equities by 2030. So it's really, really topical at the moment.
Yeah, and I think this links back to that adequacy point ultimately. You know, it's in the government's interests that people have enough money to fund a decent part of their retirement. The state pension is never going to be a sole route to a successful and happy and long retirement from a financial perspective. So the government is interested in supporting any innovation that is going to support better outcomes for people at the point of retirement and through retirement. And it's not blind to the fact that we've seen DB schemes and local authority schemes benefit hugely from their private markets allocations. And they've seen the performance differential charts. So for them, I think they're putting the challenge, and to be fair, they've worked with industry, and there's, groups such as the PLSA and other associations that have really said, how can we knock down any barriers and hurdles that currently are in place that are stopping DC schemes investing in private markets? Mm. Value for money is a big one here. If you are encouraging schemes to think about value more holistically rather than focusing on its cost too much, then the fact is that private markets investments do cost significantly more than public market investments. So, it's potentially going to change things. But I think what the government and industry is doing is saying, we've got to start moving this conversation forward.
And yes, have you seen, Dave, people start to, like your defined contribution schemes that you help start to invest in private markets? Or is that something that's more a forward-thinking objective?
Yes, I've definitely seen progress. Maybe the government and others might have liked it to be a little bit quicker and sooner, but progress is evident. I don't think we should be berating anyone for taking their time on this. Private market investing is very different and presents a lot of more challenges than public market investing.
Very bespoke for each investment, wasn't it? I don't know.
Yes.
The due diligence on each specific investment, whereas if you've got something pooled in a fund and you've got diversification within a fund, then it's a very different approach.
Absolutely. I think the governance and due diligence that needs to be undertaken on this is huge for many schemes and many practitioners in the market and managers themselves. There's a huge amount of education that needs to be done here. I think what the government and no one is suggesting is we should rush into this. Because it's members' pots at the risk here if we make mistakes. Again, a big difference between the structure of DB and DC. We fundamentally can't afford to make meaningful mistakes that mean people's pension pots are drawn down for a sustained period of time. But yes, Helen, to answer your question, progress is happening. Many of the master trusts, which is the biggest growth area in DC, kind of multi-pooled employer schemes, are targeting allocations of between 10 to 15% in private markets. And many of them have already begun that journey. They have set up, they started to build out, expertise within their businesses to better understand this area. To your point, Chris, of, it's quite different than investing in a fund.
Yeah.
And can you build diversification within a single fund? It can be done. There are providers who are building a diversified basket of private market access points within a single structure. So progress is definitely happening. One of the vehicles that supported that is a new fund vehicle, which is the long-term asset fund, the LTAF.
Mm-hmm. What exactly is that?
Effectively, the LTAF is a new fund vehicle that permits multiple underlying holdings in private markets. But importantly, the wrapper itself helps the investment platforms with on which funds sit, which pension funds then access. It helps that investment platform to navigate some of those regulatory hurdles that are in place currently, which to this point have been a huge barrier in the way. And the key one is this permitted links rules. So yeah. The LTAF helps platforms navigate that. Effectively, it gives them a governance rubber stamp from the regulator that this is a, you know, safe, good investment for DC schemes and you can do it. The challenge is every LTAF is different. Mm. Every, you know, what's underneath it, how it's structured is different. So the market is adjusting to this from a world where everything was, you know, round peg, round hole, to actually each LTAF is different. So that's another reason why it's taking some time. But lots of managers who have private market capabilities are launching these tools, and we're definitely seeing progress.
Yeah, Dave, so that's really interesting. Seeing progress, I mean, 10 to 15% for Master Trust, I mean, that sounds a fairly high allocation, you know, across all the assets a Master Trust might hold, I guess. So sounds like early days, but progress is being made. This week, so the week we're recording this, it's been announced to the market that the first collective defined contribution scheme has gone live in the UK. So that's the scheme for the Royal Mail. So collective defined contribution, that's a type of retirement provision that provides an annual income in retirement, like a DB benefit, but doesn't guarantee a level of income, so like DC. And it works by pooling assets and investing collectively. So that's a, you know, a differentiator from your traditional DC scheme. And sort of very simple understanding is that by pooling assets, pooled investment can beat people choosing their own investments as in a DC scheme. So I suppose the question is, these funds that provide access to private markets, is that something that might be suitable for CD schemes as they come to market themselves?
CDC, I think, schemes. So. Yeah, I think so, Chris. I think I'm no expert in CDC, but it's great to see that any new innovation in the DC market or in the pension savings market from that perspective. But I do agree. I think that this structure, this pooling structure, and effectively this new world, certainly for the Royal Mail for now, will mean that private markets are much more accessible to the investment decision makers and allocators within that scheme. You know, they might even be doing away with this concept of lifestyling, which we have in DC, where you move members from a, roughly speaking, higher risk allocation through to a lower risk in retirement. It may mean, because you're pooling everyone's investments and you are less concerned about individual members' point at where they are in that retirement journey, actually you can make longer term decisions. Obviously, the liquidity issues are the same in that people can't access this money for a long time. So I think it could be huge for private markets. And I think that it will be fascinating to see how the investment allocations are kind of launched. And I think the DC market, again, will only be watching on, and everyone will be seeing, okay, actually, this is making a meaningful benefit to people's investment outcomes at retirement. And maybe we should be continuing the progress we've started in DC and moving forward in earnest.
What do you think the future looks like for DC investment? Do you have any final takeaways for our listeners as to what they should be paying attention to?
I think we can just expect to see continued momentum. I think everyone's educating themselves on this. People are understanding them more. More products are coming to market, which is interesting, which is a good thing. In the very early days, there was very limited options for pension funds who wanted to move forward in this space. I think as schemes grow, which is, you know, one of the benefits of this DC system, is it's growing at such a pace, we can expect to see the way that schemes maybe allocate to private markets actually resemble how Big Brother and DB and LGPS invest, in that maybe it isn't via this LTAF structure. Maybe it's actually direct investment through this GP LP structure, which DB schemes use, or schemes are co-investing, which is something that Nest, the biggest DC pension scheme in the UK, has already started to do. I don't think we're far off some of the biggest DC schemes outside of Nest trying to do something similar. But ultimately, that these investments will take, the nature of private investing is that it will take quite a few years to get capital deployed for returns to start to come through. So it will be a number of years, I think, before we start to see meaningful results and returns. And that will be hugely important. And if the early signs are positive, then I think we can see increased momentum in this space.
So it feels like we're at the start of a journey changing the way that investments, DC investing works. And part of that is around adequacy and the value side, as you were saying at the top. But also, as Helen was saying, you got the Mansion House reforms, and Helen, soon after the Labour government came into power, they launched their ecosystems review on pensions generally, phase one of which is focused on four things, one of which is encouraging pension investment into UK assets to boost growth. So you've got the boosting growth and UK growth side of things as well. Dave, it feels like this podcast has only really scratched the surface of the options out there. But we've got to call it there. So all that remains to say is thank you for coming on. It's a really interesting discussion. And perhaps we can get you on in due course to tell our listeners how things have developed.
Absolutely. My pleasure. I'm very happy to. This is a very fast moving space. So it'd be great to come on in a few years' time and analyze what's happened.
Thanks so much, Dave.
Thank you.
Thanks for listening to the Burgessdown Pensions Pod. Our next episode is going to turn to DB schemes, and we'll cover fiduciary management oversight. If you'd like to know more about our pensions team and how our experts can work with you, you can contact myself, Chris, or any of our team via our website. All of our episodes are available on Apple, Spotify, or wherever you listen to your podcasts. Don't forget to subscribe, and thanks for listening.